Funding for The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio comes from the Helen Jones Foundation and from Citibank. Citibank's award-winning app delivers features that are redefining mobile banking, like the ability to turn your debit card off if it's ever lost or stolen, and the ability to raise ATM and spending limits. More information is at citibankonline.com. Citibank, member FDIC. Support also comes from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. See the stars of tomorrow on the stage today. Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Explore, dream, discover. And from Lubbock's Cultural District. Always creative, never flat. More information is available at lubbockculturaldistrict.org. Today we have a special edition of The Front Row. It's the first of a two-part episode where we're talking with David Becker and Rick Biella, who are respectively the Director of Orchestral Activities and Director of Choral Studies here at the Texas Tech University School of Music. Gentlemen, both, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me today.
Clint, good morning.
Yeah, Clint, it's great to see you.
Well, in this first part of the interview, I have to share some bad news with our listeners, and that is you're both retiring after wonderful careers. And what I'd like in this first part is for you to tell the story and the journey of how you came to your careers and how you came to Texas Tech, and just sort of a little bit about who you are and the things that have formed you over these years. Maestro Becker, let me begin with you. When did you know that you were a conductor or that you wanted to be a conductor?
Clint, I was very blessed to, after I left undergraduate school and graduate school, to audition and become a member of the Atlanta Symphony. While I was with the Atlanta Symphony, the conductor at that time was Maestro Robert Shaw. I was very fortunate that he put his arm around me and let me move his scores from the stand to his office. That was the beginning of my conducting career. From then, I realized that in addition to playing in orchestras, which I had done for many years, that I enjoyed, one, making music as a conductor, and also teaching. I think that's an important combination, the conductor as an educator. I really do love students. I really do love music, and I really do love sharing that with the audience. Have been in many, many universities throughout the years, University of Miami, Oberlin Conservatory, University of Wisconsin, Lawrence University. I've been very, very blessed. I did retire 4 years ago, and my cherished friend sitting next to me gave me a call and said, would you please join us in Lubbock, Texas for a year while we do a search? And again, my respect for him is just incredible. I think he's the best. And I said, because of you, I would like to come to Lubbock. My first year in Lubbock, I gained tremendous respect for what I think is a distinguished instrumental artist faculty and choral academic faculty. I very much enjoyed the outstanding students, and I was blessed, and they asked me to stay, and I did, extended the stay, and that turned into 4 years. So I'm a most fortunate person.
All right. What did you play? What was your instrument?
I was a violist.
Okay.
I was a violist. And I grew up in a family where my father was a bluegrass musician, and I was to grow up, after I was introduced at age 5 to playing bluegrass music, to be his fiddle player in his band. He made the mistake young and took me to some private lessons, and I found out that there was this thing called orchestra and chamber music and classical music, and I wandered away from the bluegrass scene. Now, of course, I cherish those memories that I had, and I love that all kinds of music, certainly bluegrass music. But my life sort of went in a different direction.
Right. You said that you worked with Robert Shaw in Atlanta, so you obviously got introduced then to the whole
choral, oratorio, repertoire, all of those things. So you really became eclectic in all of the things that you liked to do, I guess.
I was just blessed to be able to sit there in the orchestra and watch this great man and this great musician work with orchestras and choruses. It was a tremendous influence in my life. But I think most importantly, the humanity of this human being was very special to me. And I think has influenced what I have done in subsequent years as a conductor and an educator.
In conducting in university situations and with students, did you find that you enjoyed doing all kinds of repertoire? Was there a kind you liked better? What were you led to do when you conducted?
Clint, I grew up in the classic standard orchestral repertoire. I think our students need to know and experience that repertoire. Whether they choose to be a performer, and some of our students will, some will choose to be educators, some will choose to be composers. They need to be exposed to as much of this rep as we possibly can. But we've had great times at Texas Tech doing concertos for accordion, for arhu and orchestra, for guitar and orchestra, for mariachi and orchestra, for tango and orchestra. This year we had Mark Wood from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra came to town, and we had the full symphony orchestra on stage playing his rock tunes, and we had 1,300 kids sitting on the stadium floor at the fairgrounds playing rock music and orchestra. So yeah, I think it's a bit eclectic, and we've had a great time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of focus on the music educator, that perhaps they may go out, in addition to presenting Mozart and Mahler and Bruckner. Also, there are other kinds of music that they should share with their students.
Right. Well, now that you've retired for the second time, what's the next chapter for you? What would you like to do?
Clint, that's a rather recent development. So we're laughing at each other right now.
Okay.
Rick Biela and I are chuckling at each other. A few months ago, I received a phone call from Ohio State University asking if I would consider putting my name on the table with a list of candidates that they were looking at for an interim one-year position at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. These were some of my friends and colleagues and actually former students. And I said, by all means, you can certainly put my name on the list. And I never expected to hear from them again. To cut to the chase, this week, the end of last week, I agreed to accept the visiting professorship and a one-year interim position as orchestra conductor at Ohio State. So my adorable wife has agreed to allow us to make a detour through Columbus on our way back to Madison, Wisconsin, where we have our home.
Well, best of luck at the Ohio State.
Thank you so much.
And great. Thanks for visiting with us about that.
Thank you, Clint.
Rubiela, so you have been you've been at the very top of choral music now for a long, long time. How did you get there? When did you decide you wanted to be a choral conductor?
Well, it was interesting because my father was a barbershopper, and so he had a very fine barbershop chorus in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, called the Harmony Hawks. And when it came contest time, he would invite, we had a very small home, but he would invite, not invite, require his basses to come on Monday night, his tenors to come on Tuesday, and baritones and so on. So Monday through Thursday night, during contest season, they would be in a semicircle, circle, literally, around him, and he would work his magic in our living room. Now, I was the oldest of six children, so our bedtime was 8 o'clock. Well, he started rehearsals at 8 o'clock. I snuck down the stairs and would sit and watch him do his magic. And I have to say that I learned more about legato singing through his work with barbershop chorus and tuning and vowel formation and unification than probably from anybody else. It was really quite remarkable. And also his balance of humor, discipline, flow of rehearsal, I think all have influenced me over the years in very, very strong ways. Some ways I didn't even realize until after his passing some 5 years ago, that influence was really quite superb. In fact, my brother David, who is a cellist, said he learned legato on cello from Dad. This was something that he sort of connected to Shaw. I mean, I had an opportunity to work with Shaw at Iowa and prepare Beethoven 9 for him and see how he worked his rhythmic magic into that. But Shaw and all of this connection to exact placement of consonants, etc., understanding the dimension of, we don't understand the whole until we actually go minutely into the detail as well. The discipline of really tearing a score apart thoroughly. And I have to say, it's been, from there, it was a very interesting journey to a little Cornell College in Iowa, which is a small, tiny school, but very powerful music department from a standpoint of opportunities, and I got an opportunity to have my own madrigal group beginning as a junior in college that was really quite formative in terms of learning a lot about that. My experiences, contrary to David's, were not so professional at the front end. I was in Little Ripon High School to begin my career and had a wonderful experience because it was a terrible choir to begin with. My predecessor, let's say, had problems with discipline. And when I walked into the choir room, there were 200 pencils in the ceiling of the room. And that was because the students were absolutely so bored. I went into the choral library, and it was all pop crap. Threw out 95% of the literature. And we went after some stuff. We had a group, man, I only had four guys to begin with, so I went to the football coach, and said, can I have 1 hour of the guys' time at the end of rehearsal, at the end of their practice, and can we do a national anthem on the first game of that year? So we literally, I tried out these guys that had never sung before. There was one guy that could really sing. He was right in front of the mic, and then we went out from there in terms of quality to the edges where they really could not even match pitch. But it sounded great on that first game. And then I said, this is the deal. I'll give you 1 hour. You give me 1 week. And so they had 1 week in choir that first year I started. And then I said, you can quit. No penalty. But you've got to give me 1 week. Well, most of the guys decided to stay. So that was the start of the turnaround of that program. And so we went from about 20 girls and four boys to 250 singers in the course of 4 years in a school of 650 kids. And so everybody was talking about singing. So we changed the whole culture there, which was really quite remarable.
Now you... Not everybody may know this, but you have formidable keyboard skills.
And oh, you I wouldn't a, you call it formidable. You, I'd call it a little out of shape more than anything.
But you studied organ too, right?
Yes, yeah. I was an organ performance major, and I used to play, like the Outburst of Joy, Messiaen, and that kind of thing. Some of the great works. Yeah, that certainly was very formative. My work on the organ definitely. Develop my musical disciplines.
Musical
absolutely.
Skills, harmony, and things like that.
Certainly that's informed everything I do.
Well, when did you get into collegiate choral conducting?
Well, the second job I had was teaching Cedar Rapids Washington High School, and I taught there for 6 years and then took a sabbatical leave for 1 year to finish my master's, start work on the doctorate, and I planned to do a 3-year hiatus to finish the doctorate. Well, after 1 year, I got a call in the summer for a 1-year interim position at Lawrence University. And so I went up in August of that year. My wife and three kids were all living in Cedar Rapids, and my wife also very graciously said, sure, go audition, see what you can do. Anyway, so I received the offer for a 1-year contract. she remained in Iowa for a couple of months, and so I began this career at Lawrence. I have to say, the first year at Lawrence, the choir was much worse than my high school choirs, and so again, it was a major recruiting challenge to turn that program around and to move that forward. But anyway, sort of the same story as my good friend here is that they offered me the contract for a tenure track position in February of that first year, and 25 years later, I got a call from Dr. Carolyn Cruz in the airport saying, would you be interested in interviewing at Texas Tech? And I really didn't know anything about Texas Tech, was not looking for a position. But that was on a Tuesday, and on Thursday I flew from New Orleans when I was seeing my grand boys, and flew in for an interview on Thursday. I think you were involved with that interview.
Yeah. That's right, I was there. Yeah.
Graciously at the keyboard. So between Thursday and Saturday, and I was pretty smitten with the place at that time. Linda, my wife, was in Europe at the time. So I called her before I went for the interview and said, is it okay if I interview? And her words were more or less to the effect, we can go interview, but big but in the middle of that. But at any rate, long story short, a month later, we both came down to Lubbock. We fell in love with the people and with the integrity of the place and with the voice department and with all of the matters that really do matter here. Caused us to really take a detour in our planned just staying in Appleton, Wisconsin for the rest of the career. So at age 58 and a half, I decided to change careers. And David's been sort of a mentor on following dreams, and he is one that I think enjoys this opportunity to touch new groups of people as well, and to make those intersections more complete. And I have to say, he is definitely my teacher on the orchestral side. So whenever I get the opportunity to work with players of any sort, I'm always asking his advice and appreciating all he has to give me.
Right. Well, the Texas Tech School of Music has certainly been fortunate to have the two of you, Rick Biela, Dave Becker. It's been a wonderful time, and we certainly wish you the very, very best in your retirement. My goodness.
Thank you, Clint.
Thank you.
And I hope everyone will stay tuned for part two of our interview with Rick Biela and Dave Becker, which is coming up tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio. This program will be on our website later today at kttz.org. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow for part two of our interview. I'm Clint Barrick.